Let me tell you about a town. This town began at sea level and rose and climbed up the slopes towards a nearby mountain. The town was famous for its beauty and affluence. And if one stood at the sea and looked up towards the mountain, you could see a panorama that led it to be called a crown. In all the provinces, there was no more beautiful town, at least if one wishes to accept the judgment of the citizens of that town. Now, I could be talking about Ostermere. Our town's known for its beauty, for its affluence. It begins at the sea and rises up steeply, and you can look upon it and see it in all its glory. But these quotes that I just read out actually refer to the first 10th century town of Smyrna. It's pretty similar, doesn't it? 2,000 years ago. It's the next church in our series of churches that John writes to in the book of Revelation. It's one of the rare churches that doesn't actually get rebuked for its behaviour. But nonetheless, this letter keeps pointing the church in the right direction, especially the faith of the believers in this town and what they were going through, the situation they found themselves in of pressing on, of needing to endure. But for us, I think it's a good city for us to connect to as well because of what we have in common. And the same question that's asked of them is asked of us. How will we live in our city? How will we live in our town? What does it look like to be a follower of Jesus in this place today? How are we going to live in the city? As I said, Smyrna was known as an affluent place. It was a proud city, and particularly proud in terms of its allegiance to Rome. They were a Rome city. They were an emperor city. And so, like Rome, they had a famous stadium. They had a famous library. There you go, Josh. Excellent. They had the largest amphitheatre in Asia. And here's an artist's impression of what it might have looked like from the other angle. As I look at that, it kind of looks a bit more like Wollongong, doesn't it? It had a closed-in harbour. And in fact, Smyrna had the same population as Wollongong, about 250,000. But what made them particularly stand out was they were one of the centres of emperor worship. And it formed part of the pagan religions of the time. So around the city, they placed temples. They had a temple to Apollo and a temple to Aphrodite. And early on in the first century, there was even a competition of between towns to see who could erect the temple in honour of the emperor. And Smyrna beat out the other local rivals, including Sardis, who's one of the other towns that gets written to, and they erected the temple for the emperor Tiberius at the time. Here's Tiberius. So what it shows us is this town celebrated the culture around them. It was proud of being part of the Roman Empire. It flaunted its wealth, and it was clearly very aligned to the religion of the day that involved the worship of many different gods, but including the emperor as a god. But the thing about the first century kind of religion, they didn't have that split like we see. We have sort of Sunday Christians, and then the rest of the week, some people's religions and faith doesn't cross over much with their lives. But in those days, it was sort of all embracing. And so it wasn't just a Sunday thing or a Saturday thing, but it was everyday life. It influenced how the economy was run. It influenced who you mixed with and who you bought from and who you gave jobs to, what you did with your money. And it influenced people's private lives, their family, their sexuality, and what they did with their bodies. Now, there were other religions around as well. So there was a Jewish population. But the Jewish population had special exemptions. They paid a tax to Rome so that they didn't have to be involved in some of the emperor worship, like, hey guys, let's build a statue and a temple to Tiberius. And they said, no, we'll pay a tax so we don't have to be involved in that. But then, into this city came the gospel. And people were beginning then, the Christians there, claiming a different allegiance. And they said, well, we're not going to be involved in the worship of these other gods. We're not going to visit those other temples. And in fact, we're not going to pay the same tax as the Jews either. We're going to refuse that. And they really would have stood out. They stood out in the way they used their money and even in the way they conducted their private lives. And the king that they claimed loyalty to wasn't this king as a statue on a temple. It was an eternal king. A king that they said would come be coming back to judge the world. So let's have a look at this letter. What's going on here for the people of Smyrna? Well, in verse 9, it says this, I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. Imagine being a Christian in a pagan city that's caught up in this religion that's really wealthy and affluent, and yet you're a Christian and you find it hard to make a living because no one will buy from you and no one will give you a job. And so probably this poverty is referring to such cases as that. Then Jesus says, well, it's John writing, but it's really Jesus speaking, isn't it? And he's saying, I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. So as Christians began to separate themselves from the Jews, they refused to play by the same rules, like paying the tax to Rome, and then they were then slandered and rejected. So further separation. Verse 10, do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. So now they're suffering. And in fact, Jesus says, actually, it's going to get worse. It's kind of ominous, isn't it? And I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Now, this could include actual prison, but imagine living there again, the accusations, the punishments that you might have to put up with. And finally, be faithful even to the point of death. This was the threat of death itself. So this is the world of public executions. This is the gladiator world. The start of this increase in persecution and official persecution towards Christians. And that's their world. That's their choice. Are they going to be for Rome or for Jesus? How do we engage with the city around us? Now, we've been thinking about this in Revelation. What does a healthy church look like? What is it like to be loving? It's called Press On. And so I think this series, part of its intention is as a church, not just individuals, but how are we going to be the church? There are a number of ways we can approach this question. I think we could decide, well, actually, Ostermere, the rule, it's a bit hard. It's very different. We're just going to bunker down. Let's just come closer to our church and stay in our Christian bubble and in our community. So we could kind of reject the outside culture completely. It's one way of looking at it. Or we could swing the pendulum the other way and say, let's embrace the city. Let's accept and even celebrate all that it has to offer. We're an affluent city. Let's celebrate that. Let's look no different from our city. I want to tell you a story of four teenage boys. True story. Four teenage boys who lived in Iraq. They were all intelligent. They were from upper class families. They had good reputations amongst their communities. And what happened was these four boys were kidnapped and forced into slavery. Now, whilst in this situation, they were told to eat particular food that was against their religion. And they refused. In fact, they said, we will eat only vegetables and water for a period of time, And if that proved to keep them healthy enough, they're going to continue that way. Now, does that story sound familiar? Where's it from? Daniel, well, all right. If you don't know that one, it's from Daniel. But what happened is Daniel and others were taken to Babylon, where actually modern-day Iraq is, and they were taken into slavery from out of their Jewish community and into an environment that was hostile to their beliefs. And throughout the book of Daniel, we see many instances where they held jobs and continued to live life under this rule. But at other times, like with the food, and later with the way they prayed and worshipped, we saw them refusing to compromise to the culture they were a part of. This is what the people of Smyrna were commended for. This is what we're to aspire to. Jesus first. Let's be people of Jesus, not Rome, not Babylon, not Ostomir. Now, for the people of Smyrna, this meant four things in this passage. It meant slander against them. It meant persecution. It meant prison. And it meant death. What will it look like for us? To say, no, actually, I'm a Christian first. I love Jesus more than I love my lifestyle. I love Jesus more than just my personal desires. And I care more about what Jesus thinks than what the people in my city think of me. And in addition, part of this includes our aspiration. Do we actually want to look more like Jesus and become more like a healthy, loving Jesus church, or just the church in Ostomir? We could get the reputation. We could get the right look. We could have the right social media status, and we could get the right crowd. Or do we want to grow in love and holiness? Now, hopefully you're not hearing that's just for the sake of moral crusading or some other thing, some sort of superiority complex that Christians are accused of. But just the idea that you're willing to be a Christian in your school. You're willing to be a Christian in your workplace. You're not going to compromise when it comes to those things of money and work and friendship. Are you for Rome or for Jesus? Because the consequence of this, for Smyrna at least, meant not just living in a city, but living in suffering. Now imagine living in Smyrna. The tax collector comes around to your house to collect money to build the temple to Tiberius. And you say, no. So your family's hauled off to prison for a few days. Then you lose your stall at the local markets. So Alex, you can't sell your photos. Sorry. And because you don't involve yourself in the pagan religions by visiting the prostitutes at the temple, you lose most of your friends and reputation in the neighbourhood. In fact, they stop selling to you. Meanwhile, the other religious community that you still have ties to, well, they're bad-mouthing you and they're dobbing you into the authorities. Now, why would the people of Smyrna subject themselves to that? Just pay the tax, for goodness sake. It's just money. Just visit the temple Aphrodite, maybe just a couple of times. Just compromise a little bit. Sacrifice to the gods, make some vows, and whilst you're there, declare your allegiance to Caesar. It's just words. Sure, Jesus is God, but isn't the emperor the one with the power? And he's the one who can hurt you and your family. You've got to protect them, don't you? The cool thing about the Christians in Smyrna is that they said no. They didn't compromise, but with it came suffering. But the point here is, what you love, you're willing to suffer for. What you love, you're willing to suffer for. This photo is a few years old now. You might have seen it. But what it is, it's taken inside a helicopter of a soldier in Afghanistan being airlifted out. after a roadside bomb blew off his legs and one of his arms. But the tattoo that he has, which I'll zoom in for you, says this: "For those I love, I will sacrifice." This is the story of Smyrna. They love Jesus and they're willing to sacrifice for him. So what encouragement is there? Why would they live like this? Why are they willing to suffer for Jesus? Why do they love him above all this other lifestyle and culture? Well, in verse 8, these are the words of him who is the first and the last. There's this refrain throughout Revelation, but especially in the first few chapters, that Jesus is eternal. Jesus is the first and the last. Jesus holds eternity in his arm span. And so these cities, these temples, these markets, these people, this emperor, they're going to come and they're going to go. But Jesus is forever. I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. What are those first two words? I know. Jesus knows. Jesus walks amongst them. He walks amongst his people. He is with us tonight. He knows what you're going through. For the people of Smyrna, their poverty, well, that's real. That's real poverty. But there's a larger reality to be aware of. Remember, Revelation's revealing the truth, showing us what the true picture of the world is. And so this picture of Smyrna, this wealth, this affluence, this popularity with Rome and so on, that's a facade. But what's underneath? Well, those who follow Jesus, they have the true riches. Verse 10, do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Behind the scenes, there are spiritual forces as well, but even those are in the arm span of Jesus. They're under his control, and this persecution will not last. See here, it will only last 10 days. And we think, yeah, I could do 10 days. But remember, Revelation, the numbers are symbolic. So what does that mean? Well, a couple of things. Probably a multiple of 1,000 means a long time. So 10 is short. But I also want to take you back to Daniel. Now, I didn't just tell you that little story about the four teenage boys in Daniel because I thought it had some vague connection to the experience of the people of Smyrna here. It's a bit clearer than that. Do you know how long the four boys abstained from the king's food for? 10 days. It was a time of testing for them. And Revelation often does it this way. It alludes to Old Testament passages, and particularly Daniel, it picks up on it quite a bit. And the earliest readers would have known this. And there's this direct parallel with Daniel, because what was Daniel doing? He was in a city under a foreign rule, with kind of this evil emperor over them, and they were trying to live and not compromise in that world. And at times they had to suffer. They were put in prison. They were put in a furnace at one stage. And Daniel was thrown into a den of lions. But this type of persecution and testing was not forever. And so Jesus says, be faithful even to the point of death, and I will give you life as your victor's crown. Whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who is victorious will not be hurt at all by the second death. There's this promise of safety, a promise of reward. Not even death is going to win. As Nathan mentioned a little bit earlier, there's some scenes in Pakistan over this weekend, the last few days. If you haven't seen it, this is what's happening. This lady's name is Asia Bibi. And 8 years ago, this Christian woman was sentenced to death essentially for being a Christian in Pakistan. Her actual accusation is blasphemy, and there's a whole complication to her story and so on. But what basically happened, she's been on death row for 8 years, and this week her conviction was overturned, so she was free to go. It's a loaded, it's a complicated story, it's full of politics. But the long and the short of it, she was released, but she can't get out of the country because large groups of people are protesting. In fact, they're not just protesting, they're rallying. Motorways have been closed. Cars have been set on fire. Schools have been closed. The police have shut down mobile phone networks. Her lawyer has fled the country. Her husband and kids are currently in the UK. They escaped a bit earlier, but she can't get out. It's volatile. These people are calling for her to be hanged. They've put a picture on one of those big sheets and they're burning it in the streets. Now, we can remain unaffected by this or think it has little to do with us, or indeed, well, we don't face such persecution here, so it's kind of very distant to us. But surely we're to stand in solidarity with people like Asia Bibi. And other Christians around the world, the stories you don't hear, where not compromising their beliefs might result in this kind of experience. Now, closer to home, the Anglican schools this week have been under the pump for trying to express things in the right way. It's been all twisted and turned. And I want to acknowledge those of you who being a Christian is actually a real struggle. It might well mean might mean facing really tough situations at school. Some of you are the only Christians in your school. Or at work when you're bombarded with all the influence of the city. And you can say very little about Jesus. And certainly in some people's household, where behind closed doors, they face the ridicule of being different and trying to be a Jesus follower. But we have the same assurances. Jesus is eternal. Jesus walks among us. Suffering is real, but it's temporary. And there's a promise of safety and reward. There's a wonderful image in this passage as well, in verse 10. Be faithful even at the point of death, and I will give you life as your victor's crown. Now, victor's crown is less of a kind of royal crown and more so the Greek symbol of athletic victory, the Olympic wreath awarded to the winner. Or remember Tiberius before? He's an emperor. He's actually an earlier emperor before this letter was written. But look at him here. What's he doing? Well, in his right hand, he's got a scroll. So they're his accomplishments. It's the symbol. Look at what I've accomplished. His left hand is the sword, if you can't see it. Here's my power. And on his head is a victor's crown, a wreath, to show his victories. But John plays with this kind of imagery, suggesting that in all the worldly senses of this word, including Smyrna as well. Remember, they were called the crown, their actual city. The Christians appear defeated. He looks like the winner. But in reality, the Christians are the real winners. And wasn't this the experience of Christ himself? Where his crown was a crown of mockery. Crown of thorns. Look at the defeat of this person. Look at his weakness. But he's the first and the last. He died and came to life again. And by his resurrection, he overcame even death. And he's given the true eternal crown. That's the victor's crown. And in fact, he says here, he's going to give us the victor's crown. He's going to give us life. Be faithful to the point of death. And that same suffering and death that Jesus himself went through was victorious over it. As Hebrews reminds us, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. As we live in the city, and perhaps as we live in suffering, and certainly stand with those who do. Two take-homes today. Firstly, live without compromise. Simple words, be faithful. Now, for some of you, it could just be taking that step and just saying, yeah, I'm a Christian. I'm a Jesus follower. For some, it could mean some more dramatic actions or a dramatic change in your actions where maybe I've embraced the city a little bit much. For these Christians, even to the point of death, they stood firm. We read in James as well how God might even use these times of suffering to grow them and strengthen them, that God is with them through it. It's a tough sell, isn't it? Come and be a Christian. It's going to be hard. But are we a people of the city or a people of Jesus? Are we a church of the city or the church of Jesus? And secondly, live with courage. He says, don't be afraid. What does living with courage look like in your life? Well, for that lady in Pakistan, I find it very difficult to relate to that. But that's okay. Jesus knows what she's going through. He stands with her. So can we. But you might have your own fear. It could be completely genuine. It could be misplaced. I don't know. You're fearful of losing a friendship, of losing honour in your job, fearful of endangering your marriage, opening yourself to ridicule or slander. Do not be afraid. Jesus walks with us. And even to the point of death, he promises us life and the victor's crown. So let's pray this evening.